Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For millions of Americans, the automobile represents freedom of movement and personal independence. Whether you're taking a long road trip or running mundane daily errands, the ability to drive is deeply embedded in our daily lives. And New Hampshire's rural character, complete with small towns, winding country roads, and modest public transportation infrastructure, makes driving doubly important for many. But New Hampshire's large population of seniors raises some special challenges, since drivers over the age of 65 experience high rates of death and injury in motor vehicle accidents. We'll consider the issue of senior drivers, whether it poses a significant public safety risk, what kinds of driving adjustments can be made, and even how to have that potentially difficult conversation with a loved one about giving up the keys. Today on The Exchange, we're discussing senior drivers in New Hampshire, and we'd like to hear from you. You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. And I have three guests joining me for the program this morning. Todd Fahey, New Hampshire State Director of the AARP. That's the American Association of Retired Persons. Todd, thanks for coming in this morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having us.
Stacy Frazier, an occupational therapist with Drivability at Exeter Hospital, which provides evaluation, education, and training for people to gain or regain the ability to drive. And Stacy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
And William Joseph, Deputy Director of the New Hampshire Department of Motor Vehicles. And Bill, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I'd like to start by getting a general sense from each of you about whether you think senior driving in New Hampshire is a significant public safety concern. Is it an issue nationwide, especially in states like New Hampshire, New England, maybe Florida, Arizona, where you have large retiree populations? We know the CDC says there are almost 42 million drivers over 65 in 2016. That's a 56% increase over 1999. Baby boomers are retiring. So let's just start with a general sense. And Stacy, I'll turn to you, the parameters of this issue.
It is an issue in New Hampshire. I don't think that New Hampshire has a higher rate than anywhere else in the country of concern with senior drivers, but it is an area that nationwide there are more and more drivers that are older, and it's something that people need to consider, and people need to be proactive in keeping themselves driving safely longer. And we want to avoid some of the accident risk that you spoke about.
But your sense is, other than the fact that there are more retirees and a larger group of retirees nationwide, it's not a specific problem in New Hampshire, perhaps because of our rural character and more people driving, et cetera.
Correct. I think the greater issue in New Hampshire specifically is that there are less opportunities for public transportation for many of the older adults. And who might need to stop driving.
And that's something we'll talk about, what the options might be. And Todd, your sense?
Well, my sense is that, we do have an older population in New Hampshire, depending upon what number you look at, whether second or third oldest state in the nation. So we are going to have a higher percentage of people who are necessarily older drivers. But as a group, I think there's two parts of the narrative. I think these are typically safe drivers, and many of them do self-restrict, and some don't drive at night, for instance. and the actual number of accidents involving older drivers on the numbers decreases as people age. Things like not driving at night, think of things like avoiding rush hour traffic and thinking to avoid situations where they may find themselves in a stressful situation. Older drivers often have the judgment not to do that. Now, certainly there's a gradation about what that looks like as people age, and there comes a point where difficult conversations need to happen. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But it's not categorically the case that just because a person is an older driver that they are necessarily an unsafe driver or a public safety hazard.
Well, my sense, I think I read that the older drivers are actually, they drive fewer miles and they're more likely to wear their seatbelts.
Yeah. And again, I come back to the self-regulation. I mean, we work with hundreds of volunteers statewide, and we put on dozens of events every year. And many of our members, we have 230,000 in New Hampshire, I can tell you firsthand experience, they oftentimes don't want to drive at night because they know that's difficult for them. If it's a snowy day, they might be more cautious about how it is that they proceed to go out. So I think it's a discussion worth having, but I want to be careful of the categorical painting with a broad brush that this whole population is unsafe, because that I don't think the numbers support that.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, I'm interested in hearing from you. You mentioned the DMV or before the show that the DMV has some data on general accidents by age. I'd be interested if you could share that with our listeners.
Sure, happy to. So we ran the stats from the end of October of 17 to the end of October of 2018, and we broke it down for 50 to 60, 61 to 70, 71 to 80, and 81 to 90. And we broke it down by gender. So for 50 to 60, there are a total of 12,104 crashes. 61 to 70, almost 8,000. 71 to 80, 3,800. And 81 to 90, 1,300 or so. And 91 plus, 220. And I'll reference what Todd said about miles driven. As folks get older, they drive less miles. And so I think these statistics kind of reflect that.
So the older you get, there are actually fewer accidents in absolute numbers. But let me ask you, Stacy, since you deal with this in a medical context. I recall reading that the issue is that seniors, whether they're driving or in a car, have higher rates of death and injury, and that may be for medical reasons or just, you know, as you get older, it's harder to withstand those impacts. What's your sense?
That is true. And like it's already been said, the majority of people who come to us and the majority of people are coming to our program because they've been referred for a potential concern about their driving, or the question is being asked, can they return to driving after they've had a medical change? And the majority of our older drivers that come to us have restricted their driving. They are not driving at night. They're only driving locally. They only drive in good condition. They don't go out when it rains, those type of things. But there is a physical change that happens as people get older. And when they're in an accident, it tends to affect them physically at a greater amount than someone who's younger and maybe might not be so frail medically.
Yeah, Todd, my sense was I recall reading that teens have a high rate of death and injury, then it kind of drops and plateaus and then starts to go upward again when you get into your 70s. But as Bill said, when you look at the actual numbers of accidents, there were fewer just because fewer people are driving.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, let me ask you a little bit now about just the general process for the DMV. Are there any particular regulations directed at senior drivers, or is it just the same as every other category?
They are the same as every other category. We have our younger drivers that have to go through some of these remedial programs as well. However, we're speaking about older drivers, and so complaints or notification comes from either medical professionals or law enforcement or family members. But if a customer asks who submitted the complaint, we have to inform the customer. So that's number one. And then the process begins. A driver's manual and appointment letter will be sent to the customer to come and start the testing process. They have to take a full written and road exam. And so they have to pass all tests. They have three opportunities at the written, three opportunities at the road test. And that's when they get referrals sometimes after they request a hearing after these failures, and that's where folks like Stacy come into play in. We do remedial help both on the written and the road tests to try to get people, we want them to be safe drivers. And so that's the process. When they go to hearings, the hearings are informal. The hearing examiner works with the customer, works with the DMV representative and from driver licensing. And, you know, we consider all the options. So our goal is to, if the person desires to drive, to facilitate that, facilitate the opportunity for them to be a safe driver again.
So there's no particular additional testing that is required by rule here in New Hampshire. I read that in some other states, maybe half, and it was quite half the states in the U.S., there may be some additional requirements that you have to deal with, say, more frequent renewal or some sort of road test when you reach the age of 70. New Hampshire doesn't do any of that.
No, we don't.
It's really no different than if, say, a teen driver gets into a,
correct,
a situation.
Okay. Correct.
Todd, you want to jump in?
Well, I think a couple things to build upon. I mean, we are an aging state, and older people in New Hampshire wish to remain in their communities and their homes as they age. And we do have, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, a relatively modest infrastructure for public transportation. So obviously the driving component's critical.
Yeah.
But I mean, the overarching theme is that when it comes to cars and driving, everyone's first priority needs to be safety. And so we're all responsible for keeping up our skills, and we need to monitor our loved ones' drivings, old and young, parents and adult children, to be sure that that people are safe, whether they're driving or whether they're driving with other drivers or whether they're just pedestrians. So it's certainly an important point to talk about safety first.
Mm-hmm. And so, Stacy, let me turn to you. We heard Bill describe the process for dealing with drivers. How does your work as an occupational therapist at Exeter Hospital fit into that? When do you typically see people coming to you?
Our program at Drivability is a comprehensive driver rehab program. So we work with individuals from the age of 15 and a half up, anybody who has a challenge related to driving. As far as our older drivers go, the majority of our referrals are typically from physicians or other medical professionals for an older person who has had some sort of a medical change or a medical diagnosis that they need to be evaluated to determine whether they can continue driving or not. We do at times have referrals from the Department of Motor Vehicles for people who have been suspended for medical reasons. They may or may not be older drivers. One of the big concerns I hear from the older drivers who come to us is their concern that we're just going to take the license away because they're such and such of an age. That isn't the case. Our program's goal is always to try to keep people driving safely, independently, for as long as possible. We do have training, education, some different compensatory things that we can work with individuals to help them maintain their driving for as long as possible. And it's the unfortunate situation that occasionally we do have to tell people that it's time and we recommend that they discontinue driving.
Looking across the range of people who come in to work with you, and you mentioned DMV referrals on occasion, does that skew towards any particular age or is it fairly evenly distributed? So are you seeing more DMV referrals from teens or from senior drivers, or there's no obvious
specifically from the Department of Motor Vehicles?
Yeah, so Bill described a process by which someone may have to be, address a particular driving issue. They come to you. Mm-hmm. Are they more typically seniors, or are you seeing all different ages?
Referrals from the Department of Motor Vehicles are probably more frequently older adults because we're being asked to look at them from a medical standpoint. So something has happened to this individual medically, and the question is, can they keep driving based on this medical change?
Now, Todd, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there really is no, I think this is a multifaceted approach to being sure that people can continue to drive safely for as long as they can. There's no silver bullet. And so there's a lot of things that come to bear on this, making sure that we have, appropriate safeguards for people who are driving, that we have a mechanism for evaluating people who might be troubled drivers, but also that we have the environment, a travel environment that's safer, and that we you know, we encourage family discussions, and we can talk about that in a few minutes, about when it might be time to maybe take a refresher course or think about giving up your license. But it doesn't go, you don't, one doesn't necessarily have to go from being a driver to not having a license. We have a lot of resources online, aarp.org, driver safety, where people can take driver safety courses, or they can they can sharpen their skills, so that oftentimes people get licensed at 16 years old and then they never really go back and get refreshers. So that's a long time to not be refreshed on the rules of the road, and we try to facilitate that process.
Yeah, Bill?
So I'd like to speak to the point that Stacy made about folks coming to them and thinking that someone wants to take their license. And I believe our approach at the DMV is customer-centric, and we understand the needs of these folks, and we understand their desires and their situation. And so we try to facilitate whatever we can do to make sure they have every opportunity to get back on the road. Mm-hmm. And Stacy spoke to medical issues. There are many times some of these situations are temporary. For example, if someone has a seizure issue or something like that, that can be a temporary issue that can be resolved with medication, and people can get back on the road. There are things like that that we deal with that, you know, we're very sensitive to.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, you had mentioned earlier, before we were talking before the show, about some of the regulations in New Hampshire in the past dealing with testing.
Yes, you know, in 2011, the, you know, 75 and older was repealed. So when folks turn 75 at their expiration date, at their renewal time, once they hit 75, they had to be reexamined. That hasn't been in place for 8 years.
And Todd, could you say a little bit about AARP's stance on any legislation in New Hampshire that might deal with these issues of senior drivers?
Yeah, we haven't had occasion to deal with it in the past few years. Obviously, since 2011, things have been sort of status quo. You know, the legislature's spoken on the issue, so there hasn't really been much that we've engaged on in the recent past, and nor is there anything in this session that we're looking at.
Yeah. Stacy, is there anything in particular that you would like to see from the state legislature or the DMV that would sort of fit well with what you do in your occupational work in terms of either legislation or regulations, or you think things work pretty well the way they are now?
No, I don't think there needs to be any major change related to any legislature. From my standpoint, I would love to see people before it gets to this situation where they've been in an accident or the DMV has to be involved. It should be looked at as a more proactive, healthy approach, such as what he said about AARP. I mean, it's true. They have not had any driver's education or any remedial things necessarily since they were 16. Mm-hmm. We want you to come earlier. We want to avoid the accidents and things happening.
And Todd, what kinds of things might AARP offer to a senior driver?
Well, we have aarp.org driver safety. So different things like a program called CarFit, and it's something Stacy may be aware of as an OT, to make sure that a person in a car has their mirrors adjusted and the car is situated to their particular physical situation, whether it be distance from a steering wheel, the manipulation of the mirrors, et cetera. But there's also the driver safety program. We have dozens of driver safety volunteers in New Hampshire who can do these programs around the state. And it just helps people refresh their skills. There's some virtual online driving things people can look at online at aarp.org, driver safety. And so sometimes a refresher is very helpful as well. But I would come back to your question about legislation. There's mm-hmm. one thing, whereas we offer these programs and many take advantage, I'm fairly certain, and I'm fairly certain that there is not an insurance discount for those people who avail themselves of that in New Hampshire. And that might be something that we could look at to incentivize people to remain safe and to think about sharpening their skills as they get older.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to take a short break, but coming up, we got lots more to talk about with senior drivers. We'll take your calls and comments, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Civic Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a 6-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Today, senior drivers. Are you an older driver and wondering about how safely you're driving? Or do you know someone who no longer feels safe on the road? Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond to Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. I have three guests with me. In the studio today, William Joseph is the Deputy Director of New Hampshire DMV. Stacey Frazier is an occupational therapist with drivability at Exeter Hospital. And Todd Fahey is State Director of New Hampshire AARP. And folks, let's go to the phones. We have Betty joining us from Salem. Betty, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted that you're talking about this favorite subject of mine. I have a bill, House Bill 571, that will be heard this month, that would give confidentiality to the people who are concerned about someone. Usually it's a close friend or relative, and they're concerned about their driving. But if they say something, they don't have the convincing that is needed to get somebody to get tested. Meanwhile, they're scared to death to see this person drive. So this would address the issue that's missing in our current statutes. The current RSAs say that if you report someone and ask for them to be retested, they have to be able to tell your name to that person, which can really destroy a relationship. The current laws only protect doctors who make such a report from being sued. They don't protect the doctor's identity either. And so a couple of doctors I know who are representatives say this wrecks their relationship too.
Betty? Okay, well, we seem to have lost Betty. But Betty, thank you for that call. I think we can pick it up from here. And Bill, let me turn to you on this issue of confidentiality. We talked a little bit about the process before.
Correct. So I do believe that this is an issue, especially in families. Families are afraid sometimes to affect a relationship that they have, very close relationship, yet they're very concerned about their loved one. And so when they call, we have to tell them that, yes, if they ask, we have to tell who informed us. So I do think that that is somewhat of a deterrent. For people reporting folks. And when that happens, we try to refer them to the medical profession to see if maybe the medical professional would be willing to write a letter.
Yeah, Stacey, let me hear from you on this.
This is a reason often why we're brought into the picture before it even goes to the Department of Motor Vehicle, because physicians don't want to be the ones who have to tell their people not to drive. Family members don't want to be the ones who have to tell their family member they can't drive or that changes need to happen within their driving environment. So often we are the person who is the expert and the professional and can give a detailed evaluation with very objective criteria as to whether they can or they can't. So it's a professional that's telling these people yes or no. And it takes that pressure off.
So in a way, this is the proverbial, if you won't listen to me, listen to your doctor.
Correct. You should be listening to the person who has the professional knowledge to make the decision, because you as a family member, you might be wrong.
It also takes the emotion out of it to some extent, obviously.
Yeah,
Todd?
Yeah, and to that point, that's exactly right. You know, with safety being the top priority for everybody, there needs to be a discussion. So we did a publication and a survey some years ago with MIT and the Hartford Insurance, and it's called We Need to Talk. And it talks about who ought to have that first conversation. And it's interesting. In many ways, men prefer to hear from a spouse slightly more than women, but spouses are the preferred messenger of the message. and then doctors outside of the family, and then adult children. And the last person people really want to hear from, oddly enough, is the police officers, because, of course, at that point, they're in a little bit of trouble.
Okay. Bill, we had an email from Derek, and I'm not asking you to take a position on this, but I'm just wondering what the sort of from an administrative perspective. Derek asked, would it be possible to have an annual or biannual test for drivers over 65?
It would have to be. We enforce the laws and rules enacted by the legislature, so the legislature would have to.
But would that be doable, or would that be a significant burden on the
DMV? It would be a significant burden, because the number of road tests that we have and written tests that we have is significant already. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank Betty for that call a moment ago, and we're going to link to the AARP resources on how to talk to your family as well at nhpr.org. Stacy, let me turn back to you and ask a little bit about kind of the sort of what types of medical conditions do you most typically see linking with senior drivers? Are there any things that are sort of typical signs that people would look for? Do you tend to see the same kinds of issues, whether it's vision or mobility, or what kinds of issues do you typically see most frequently?
Well, for all of us, as we age, there are changes that happen just as a result of normal aging. Our vision changes. Our depth perception is lessened. Our peripheral vision is lessened. It becomes more difficult for us to see at night. Our reflexes become slower. Our bodies become stiffer, so it becomes more difficult to turn your head at intersections, things like that. So there is a normal aging process that potentially could affect driving. That usually isn't the case just from a normal standpoint unless multiple things happen. But the diagnoses we see most frequently are neurological issues, people who have had strokes or a medical change related to that. We also see a lot of individuals with some type of a dementia diagnosis, which becomes a problem eventually at some point with a diagnosis like that. They will need to stop driving. And we're often used to determine, can they continue now with certain protective things to put in place from a safety standpoint, usually with the help of family? Do they need to stop driving? How often should it be looked at for whether they need to continue driving or not?
We're talking about senior drivers today on The Exchange. The risks and challenges of driving, they change as we get older, and we look at how age impacts driver safety and how you can stay safe on the road as you get older. You can join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at NHPR Exchange, all one word. Stacy, and I'm also interested to hear what you think. We had an email from Alex in Concord, and Alex said, my parents are getting older, but they are still very independent. I don't think there are any issue with them driving themselves at this point. I imagine one day those issues will arise, though. What are signs that I should look for as they age that might indicate I should perhaps intervene? So, Stacy.
Excellent point. It's a conversation we all should be having with our family as they get older. Some of the things that you might see happening would be your parents driving less. Talk to them about how they are driving. Have they gotten lost at all? Are they finding any traffic situations confusing, difficult? And take the opportunity to ride as a passenger with your parents frequently as they age. It's a good way to keep track. Ask them questions. You know, are other drivers beeping at you? How do you do at this intersection when you're taking a left here? Talk to them about their routes and what's going on, especially if both parents are still driving. They'll probably give you feedback about how the other one drives.
Yeah, Todd?
I think those are all great points that Stacy makes, and I think that it's consistent with the whole idea of early, occasional, and candid conversations to establish a pattern of dialogue that can reinforce driver safety issues and identify things. And I think one really good idea is go for a ride with your older parent or loved one. Just ride with them. See what that looks like. And as Stacy said, there's all types of other opportunities to facilitate those candid, frequent conversations, whether it be, you know, an accident. Hopefully you don't get to that point. Perhaps a near miss, self-regulation of driving, as Stacy says. There's lots of opportunities, or maybe a change in health condition.
Bill, did you want to jump in at all?
Well, you had asked me before about contributing factors for accidents.
Sure.
I do have some statistics
sure,
on that.
Happy to hear
but
that.
I would say the leading statistic would also speak to what Stacy said about flexibility for older drivers not being able to move their heads, because one of the top reasons for accidents for older people is failure to yield right away. So that goes to looking to your left or to your right before you proceed. So I think that's significant.
Is there any in fact, my next question to you was going to be, what kinds of accidents do we typically see? So it sounds like that's a big one.
That's
yielding.
A big one. Inattention, distraction is also one of the issues. Unsafe backing. So we've heard about the incidents where people drive into buildings. We talked about earlier. That can happen as well, where people fail to brake. They step on the accelerator instead
sure.
of the brake. So those things happen.
Todd.
Well, there's also, and to that point, I think there are natural changes that we all undergo as we age. But what's been fairly exciting change is a lot of the technology that was once cutting edge is now going to be required on cars. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my wife just bought a new car and not an expensive car particularly, but it has those lane sensors. So you know when people are close by and when you're backing it, there's some warning things. So our technology is also assisting people as well. And we have a lot of information about how that might interface with older drivers.
Yeah,
on
Stacey,
our website.
That's a great. I was going to just mention that, Stacy. My car is about 9 years old, and I took it in to get serviced, and they gave me a brand new loaner with like 1,000 miles, and I almost didn't have to drive. It like braked automatically.
Exactly.
It gave me a rear view camera. It beeped when I got anywhere near anything. It was remarkable, and I think that's something where maybe it's worth the investment to upgrade the technology.
Absolutely. The biggest issue with technology in cars is the driver needs to know how to use it. So it doesn't do any good right. if you have a rear view camera if you aren't using it. It okay. doesn't do any good if every time your lane changer is going off, so you shut it off because it's annoying you. Oh. So you have to get that education in how to use it and how to incorporate it to help you drive safer. And that is a big, big thing. Rear view cameras solve so many of the problems that we talked about as far as range of motion and being able to look and all those type things. But you have to learn how to use it.
That's a very important point. And people can't see me in the studio today, but I was smiling because mm-hmm. I helped my mom lease a car a few years ago, and she's in her late 80s. And as the salesman went through all the technology, I could just see her glaze, and I knew we were going to have to sit down and go through very carefully what this, you know, how to use things, because it's a great point. It's not helpful if you can't use it. Yeah.
And we do work with individuals. Sometimes they're older drivers, sometimes they're not, who will come to us and spend some time with us on what the new safety components are, how to adjust them, how to set them up, and actually having us physically ride with them in their own car to make sure they're using it and incorporating what they have.
Yeah, in our case, it's kind of funny. We have it's not a particularly expensive car. It's a Mazda, but when we're driving along, if you veer over the center line, the steering wheel begins to shake. And first I thought the car might be broken, but then it'll actually gently nudge you back into the lane you're supposed to be in. So I suppose there is a way to shut that off. Why you would want to do that, I don't know. But it does come back to the whole idea that safety is paramount, and we have to have these discussions, and we all have to be mindful of that to ensure that everybody is safe.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We have John joining us from Wilton. John, welcome to the Exchange.
Yes, well, thanks for taking my call. It seems like you've already covered some of my questions, but with the advent of technology, fully autonomous vehicles just around the corner, it seems like that is going to be the answer to elder drivers.
Semi-autonomous, so what about, are you talking about self-driving cars or just the assisting technology?
No, the assisting technology is here now, as you've just been talking about. However, I believe the fully autonomous vehicles will be the answer when they become more prevalent. You know, and that I believe that's just around the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, Tesla already has some beta modes out there being used by the public now.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks. That's John and Wilton. We appreciate your call. Bill, let me bring you back into the conversation. Your thoughts about the conversation we've been having on technology.
Well, there have been study committees looking at the potential for autonomous vehicles and what the ramifications are for drivers in New Hampshire. So it is coming technology. It is going to happen. We don't know when, but we are aware of it. We're looking at it. And the legislature is also aware of it.
What would be some of the issues in terms of differentiating the autonomous from just high-tech cars that help you out?
Well, there are some control issues, driver issues, things like that. I mean, there are a lot of ramifications to this that are, you know, complex, that have to be sorted out based on what our current laws and rules are and what the future laws and rules would have to do to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. So that's difficult.
Yeah. Todd, you want to jump in?
Yeah, a couple points on that. The first is autonomous vehicles, to some degree, do hold a great deal of promise, particularly for the rural transit that is lacking in New Hampshire. And that's not a knock on anybody who runs rural transit systems. I know them well from my friends in the business. But I would say that it still doesn't solve for that 20 or 30 feet getting from the house necessarily into the autonomous vehicle if you have a mobility issue. So, and that really is a finding of MIT and its age lab. And the second thing is, as far as autonomous vehicles go, there's a difference between autonomous vehicles in a place like Boston, where one could really take one down to Boston and just set it free all day to drive around without paying for parking. Or, put it in a parking garage and pay, or, you know, using an autonomous vehicle in a rural setting. So I do think there's some public policy issues that are going to need to be addressed, certainly in more densely populated areas, about in addition to the things that Bill speaks about.
So, Stacy, just to bring this technology conversation full circle back to you. So do you spend time with senior drivers showing them how to use technology, or is just something you recommend to them that maybe they look into?
Both. We do have people that contact us who have gotten a new vehicle and want some input into that vehicle. We just recently purchased a new vehicle for our program. Again, not a real expensive car, and it's exciting to see what's being put into vehicles. We bought a Ford Fusion, and it's loaded. It's got everything in it. So we now also have a vehicle that we can educate all of our clients, whether it's brand new drivers or older drivers, in what technology options are out there, and show them how it interfaces with how they're doing driving-wise.
But you also work in you would also work with their cars as well?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, interesting. Bill?
So we're working also at a national level. We belong to the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, and one of our supervisors is on that national study committee. So we get to see what's on the cutting edge and what is coming in autonomous vehicles. So that person brings that knowledge back to New Hampshire to share with both our folks at the DMV, Department of Safety, as well as the legislature.
Well, we do have to take one more short break, and we'll coming up more on the specific challenges of older drivers. We'll talk a little bit about issues with transportation infrastructure in New Hampshire. We'll come back around and talk a little bit more about how to talk with your family, if this is an issue for your family. And we'll continue to take your calls and emails as well. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Tomorrow on our show, CBD, we look at a chemical derived from the marijuana plant that's getting a lot of attention in New Hampshire and nationwide for its potential to help with many ailments. But there is a lot we still don't know. So that's tomorrow. But today we're talking about the specific challenges facing older drivers. You can send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can call us at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at NHPR Exchange, all one word. I have three guests with me for the program today. Stacy Frazier, who is an occupational therapist with drivability at Exeter Hospital. Todd Fahey, State Director of New Hampshire AARP, and William Joseph, Deputy Director of the New Hampshire DMV. And folks, let's go to the phones, and we have Jill in Peterborough. Jill, welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I'm an AARP member, and I'm 70 years old, and I commute about 15 minutes from my home to my office every day. And here's what I would really like, as being one of the boomers on the forefront here. I would like to see AARP and the insurance companies get behind developing a virtual reality simulator that older people could be tested on, not only for how well they're driving, but also be able to give them data feedback on what the reaction times are and how their visual focus was and all that kind of thing. And then legislatively, we say that you have to have this test at age 60, and then maybe every 5 years until you're, say, 75, and then maybe every 2 years. But with the data that people get back from the testing, they can make decisions about how and when they want to stop driving. And that maybe there's a scale in the testing that says, well, your night vision is getting really poor. We recommend you only drive during the day. Or maybe at some point that becomes an imperative. But that the skills for driving are assessed and can be used to inform the driver, and it be on a, you know, on a sliding scale over age. Because I know 80-year-olds who can still drive fine, but I also know 60-year-olds who are health impaired and they're not good at driving.
Sure. Well, let's take Jill. Thanks for that question. Let's take it to the panel. Stacy, your thoughts on the simulator idea?
There are simulators that have been developed already that are used to assess and train people for driving. In the driver rehabilitation world, there are a lot of programs that use simulators. Simulators are very cost restrictive. They're hugely expensive, and they don't always give the most accurate data as far as how someone actually really does behind the wheel. So we do not use them in our program, but there are that technology is already there.
Mm-hmm. Bill, do you think was that something where you think the DMV could ever have, like a simulator to test people, or no? You're shaking your head.
I do not think so.
Not likely to happen.
Not likely to happen.
Okay. Bill, let me ask you, we had an email from Gail who asked about is it a great idea to allow seniors to renew operator licenses online?
Well, everybody is regulated the same in New Hampshire, so once every 10 years, folks have the opportunity to renew their driver license online.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's go back to the phones. We have Dick calling us from Concord. Dick, welcome to the Exchange.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
I'm 71, and I haven't had a driver's ed course since I was 16. And I share some of Jill's points, which is there a voluntary program where one could, of one's own volition, go and more or less get a tune-up and get a feel for what some maybe new defensive driving techniques are or how best to use the new technology? I mean, I find the backup camera, for example, very useful when I'm coming out of my driveway. But in other situations, trying to look both ways, like in parking or something like that, also be looking down at the dashboard to see the backup camera, it's not sort of logically where you would look. I mean, it you're trying to look behind you and to each side and then also down at the dashboard. You know, it's a little confusing. So maybe there's some techniques for doing that more effectively. And are there any programs where one could go and improve one's driving skills because as an individual you were concerned about this?
And Dick, I sympathize with you. I mentioned we had a loaner a little while back, and my wife's reaction to the technology was, could they give you any more reason to take your eyes off the road and look at the screen on your dashboard? So that's a concern, I think, for everybody, not just seniors. But let me turn to each of you and ask you a little bit about this issue of resources and programs. And Todd, let me go to you first.
Well, we have exactly that on our website, and we have dozens of people in New Hampshire who are committed to helping people sharpen their driving skills. And the program content is supposed to be fresh so that we talk about advances in technology and how to use it. And again, that can be done either virtually or in an in-person session if you go to aarp.org, driver safety. And in addition to us, there are other organizations that have driver safety programs. Sometimes when people are they have some problems and they're supposed to go to a safe driver program. I'm sure Bill can speak to that. There are people who are certainly able to help people refresh and sharpen their driving skills. And there's sometimes a small fee to participate in those programs, but they're widely available in New Hampshire.
Yeah, Bill?
Yeah, these referrals through hearings, but safe driver programs are common. So, yes.
Stacey, any other thoughts about resources?
Well, first of all, it's really exciting to hear people wanting to be proactive, and it has increased our seeing people who are still healthy coming, wanting to be evaluated proactively to see if there's any issues that are coming and starting, and then doing a couple of sessions with us. And our training's a little bit different than what you would get through AARP, where it's online things, where we actually physically are with you in the car and are able to give you those hands-on examples and hands-on techniques.
Todd, do you want to jump back in?
I would just say one thing as we have this discussion is that 65 is not what it once was. And I have to – that is the lane that AARP is in frequently. I mean, no pun intended here. but I would say that I think we have to be careful that we don't categorically just say that somehow at 65 everything magically stops working or people become less than productive or safe or whatever adjective you'd like to apply to them. I think we have to be careful of that sense of people. We are all living longer. Life expectancy is much longer than it was a mere 30 years ago. So I think we have to be aware of that.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit before about how to deal with family members who maybe it's time to longer drive. And Bill, I don't know that the New Hampshire DMV would necessarily approve of this, but Diane from Bartlett wrote us and said her father had dementia, was getting aggressive when driving. So she had to use imagination to take away the license. She faked a letter from the U.S. government saying he could no longer drive. Probably not something the DMV would condone, but
it is an issue, though. I mean, it's getting back to that same discussion about how sensitive this can be for family members who care so much about these folks and seeing the changes that they have medically, physically. And knowing that they need to address these issues, it's a safety issue for them and for others. It's a difficult, difficult issue to deal with.
Tom?
Yeah, it is difficult to deal with, but the conversation needs to happen, and it's even broader. It begins with the conversation, as the deputy director correctly identifies. But it's bigger than that. So what is the next step after that? These are still human beings who want to live in their communities. They want to age. So what happens once the keys are taken? You just leave people alone and they can't get about? I mean, they become a shut-in in their homes. And then how do we design our communities so that they're more livable and walkable and that people of all abilities, whether they can drive or can't, how do they get around, particularly in an aging state within an aging nation?
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones again, and we have John joining us from Hampton Falls. John, welcome to the Exchange.
Hi, thank you. I, too, am in my early 70s, and I want to quickly share a couple of experiences I had with two elderly men, one being my father. The first one was a friend of mine who had no family, and I happened to spend a lot of time with him as he was aging. And at one point, he received a letter from the DMV saying they had to attend a hearing, and he was course very confused by that, but we come to find out that his doctor had written to the state because of her concerns about dementia, and he was hugely upset. I went to the two hearings with him, and the fellow who handled the hearings was wonderful, but Don never really accepted the fact that he was not a good driver, and I think fought it for the rest of his days. As a matter of fact, he kept threatening to find a new doctor and get a letter that would rescind what his early doctor had said. We were determined to help him by driving him to any places he needed to go, but the idea of giving up his freedom was really tough for him.
John,
my father.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, continue.
Well, my father, who was in his early 90s and still driving, was a concern to us as a family, as siblings. And thankfully, he was a penny pincher, and his car needed a fair amount of work, and he decided it wasn't worth it. And with him, it was much easier because he was still quite active in his 90s. But again, we promised to drive him to wherever he needed to go, whenever he needed to go. And that seemed to settle him. He was happy with that for the rest of his days.
Hmm. John, thanks for sharing those stories with us. And Stacy, in listening to John, I was thinking of my own late father. And I'm thinking about what it would have been like for you to have to deal with him to tell him that his driving was not up to par. How is it for you in terms of, do you get pushback from some senior drivers who feel like they're being treated unfairly or that in some way they're not really an issue in terms of their skill?
It's an incredibly difficult discussion to have with someone. We usually include, if our clients will allow us, them and their family. And I will say that the majority of clients that come to us who we have to tell that we recommend they stop driving, the majority of them, by the time we're done the conversation, they have come to acceptance with it. They've been given the objective data. We've been able to show them exactly why. And then our final recommendation to them is spending time going through how are they going to now continue with their life. It's just as important to us to have unsafe people not be driving, but yet still have them be able to live their lives. Mm-hmm. So it's important to me. Can John get to his church service on Sundays? Mm-hmm. Can he get to the grocery store? How is he going to be able to do that?
Yeah.
So we help work through that and have a lot of resources for people related to that.
Yeah, as I mentioned in the open, it really is embedded in many people's lives, particularly in a place like New Hampshire where you have the sort of rural and you don't have quite the transportation infrastructure you might have elsewhere. Todd, let me turn to you. We have an email from Tom. Perhaps you can speak to this, or maybe even Bill. Would your guests care to comment on the role insurance companies play with older drivers? They obviously have a financial stake as the boomers age and attempt to drive. How proactive are the insurers in protecting the public and their bottom line?
Well, I can speak to our work with the Hartford Insurance Company and in the We Need to Talk series. It's not really necessarily a slant only to continuing driving, but ensuring that the driving is safe. And again, I would refer the listeners to the We Need to Talk information, and they can make that call for themselves. That was a joint endeavor between AARP, the MIT Age Lab, and the Hartford.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, but I also have an email for you from Don, who says, while I'm not an OT like Stacy, she and I are both certified driver rehabilitation specialists, CDRS. I don't do older driver assessments in New Hampshire any longer as I work in Massachusetts, but I have in the past. I want to echo her points regarding what to look for as warning signs, and family is often in the best position to do this. Being proactive with this population is a major step towards public policy.
Hi, Don. Thanks for sending that in.
So let's talk a little bit about public transportation infrastructure. Certainly a challenge in New Hampshire in particular. I think it's why we see a lot of people driving into their 80s and even early 90s. Todd, let me turn to you. What do you suggest to people here in New Hampshire? How do you deal with maybe not being able to drive when you live in a small town somewhere?
Well, that's a complicated one, and I'll try to be clear on it. So when I speak about livable communities and some of the challenges in New Hampshire, two come to mind, and they are readily raised by people. One is transportation, whether the younger generation in New Hampshire or the older. It's transportation and it's housing, both challenges. And certainly there are ways to people can make their communities more livable, and they can focus on issues of transportation. You can organize potentially a volunteer transportation corps in a smaller town that doesn't have the ability to support it themselves through funding. But I would say in the larger places and or where there is public transportation, oftentimes, and I've had some experience with this, people don't ride it. And it might be important to ride the transportation because in some cases, if people aren't riding it, then there's not enough money raised locally to get a federal match. And so ridership is a big issue, particularly up in the North Country where people, for whatever reason, don't ride public transit. And there's just all kinds of reasons for that. But there is an opportunity to maybe use it more extensively than we do here.
We're getting short on time, but we have an email here from Karen that I wanted to get to. It was a very interesting email. Karen said, and I'll ask each of you for a reaction. I've just been to the Department of Motor Vehicles with my 89-year-old father. The hearing was a result of an accident. On this hearing, the department advised him that he had a clean record. He doesn't. He's had two other accidents in 3 years. They've let him keep his license with a driving test. They even gave him two shots at it. I appreciate the need for fairness to the driver. However, I am so concerned for him and others. He is insistent he can drive safely. Any conversation with him gets ugly. Please help. So more broadly, if you don't want to necessarily comment directly on the facts of her case, just to remind people where they can turn for help with this particular issue. And I'll start with you, Stacey.
I would highly recommend that you speak to his physician, or as a family, recommend that he go in for a driving eval by a certified driver rehabilitation specialist. Often if family says, this is the professional we want you to see, Dad, they are the experts. They will take you in the car. They will tell you whether you're safe or not safe. We want you to go to this, and then we'll support whichever decision is made. Hopefully that will be enough to convince him to get looked at further, because the Department of Motor Vehicle, it's a basic road test. That's what they need to do, and someone can pass that.
Todd and Bill, real quick.
On a more extreme basis, people may need to consider disabling the car, filing down the keys, or removing the car altogether from the household. That's not going to be well received, but sometimes direct action is going to be required for safety.
I agree with both.
Well, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests for a really interesting and informative conversation. You can check NHPR.org for links to a lot of what we've discussed today. And I want to thank my guests, Todd Fahey, who is a New Hampshire State Director of the AARP. Todd, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Dean.
Stacey Frazier, an occupational therapist with drivability at Exeter Hospital. Stacey, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And William Joseph, Deputy Director of the New Hampshire DMV. Bill, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
And remember, the conversation always continues online on Facebook and on NHPR.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.